to Reality Check. I'm here with Akura. This is Mahatma Das. And today we're going to be talking about how it's possible to misunderstand Krishna consciousness, misunderstand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in a way that it has negative effects. And particularly we're going to be talking about beliefs that develop from misunderstanding Krishna consciousness, beliefs that cause us to become discouraged, unenthusiastic, or beliefs that may just cause us to go, leave Krishna consciousness, or totally hamper our bhakti. So, Akura, in an interview with one devotee, asked this devotee to give him his negative beliefs or his limiting beliefs about Krishna consciousness. So he came up with a list, and then Akura added a few more that he's observed in his own life and in the life of other devotees that he's counseled and coached. So we're going to go through this list, and we're going to briefly discuss it. And this will help clarify any misunderstandings you may have. So the first limiting belief here is, and this doesn't sound like a limiting belief, it sounds very positive, but it can end up being a limiting belief. Krishna consciousness means that we have to give up everything. So why you think, why would that be a limiting belief? That's the goal of bhakti, is to surrender. But the point is, if somebody hears that and thinks, oh no, I have to give up everything, that may have this tremendously negative effect on them. They just run the other way.
Mm.
So what's the positive side of giving up everything?
We don't give up anything actually in Krishna consciousness. We just give up things that are unfavorable. And we use everything in Krishna's service. This is the principle of Yukta Vairagya.
So some things that I've noticed, which were very favorable for me as a younger devotee, now are unfavorable.
Like what?
Which I think is part of the process. Maybe attachment to doing a particular service that kept me in Krishna consciousness. And then later on I realized I was just attached to that particular activity. I wasn't attached to doing it really to please Krishna. Or I realized that by doing that activity I've become attached to it and I really need to move on. I think that's part of the process of growing. You know, what young children do, what they need to do when at a certain age. If they keep doing it when they're older, it's not good. And a lot of times the parents will just say, no, you can't do this anymore. It's not age appropriate. And another aspect of what I think we're talking here about, distinguishing what we should give up and what we shouldn't, because obviously everything can be used for Krishna, or almost everything. But then there are certain things we want to give up, like the anarthas. So yes, Krishna consciousness does mean giving up certain things, but the anarthas are things that, what does anartha mean? It means things that are unwanted. So what's the problem of giving up something that's ultimately unwanted by the soul, by the heart? And when we give them up, we all experience, we actually become very happy. So the positive side of giving up everything means, yeah, we'll give up everything we don't need, everything that is blocking our bhakti, and we'll accept everything which will help our bhakti, which means we can utilize so many of our talents. And another important principle is bhakti is not based on giving up. It's not based on renunciation. It's based on devotion. Renunciation comes as a byproduct. So ultimately, like when we say we're afraid to give up, we can't give up anything unless there's bhakti. So why should we be afraid of giving it up? Because we're not going to give it up anyway unless there's bhakti, unless there's a higher taste. So that's a very positive way to understand. Yes, I want to give up everything, and that will naturally come. When we saw Prabhupada, we wanted to give up everything for Prabhupada. It wasn't like we thought about it. We wrote essays to convince our minds that we should do it. We had nightmares about it. We sweated over it. We got sick. We just did it because we wanted to. So I think that's an important point. So we're going to go on to the next one. Krishna consciousness means that we can't maintain personal traits, that we have to leave our identity. Well, that's scary. You become a nobody. Is that you become a non-entity? Yeah, that would be scary to be a non-entity, unless you're a Mayavadi. So yeah. What do you have to say about that?
it's when you are giving up material life with which you were identifying, then it may be this transition may be difficult because you are giving up the old qualities, the old activities with which you were identifying with, and now you are getting into new things and new activities, and then it seems like you are losing ground under your feet. And so therefore this transition has to be done very intelligently with also proper guidance from the spiritual master or different shiksha gurus or mentors, so that the devotee always feels that he is still himself, he is still his own person, he is still in there with his own free will. Very important point about identity is free will. So you choose what you want to do. Therefore, I always ask devotees, what do you want? Well, I don't know, I'm waiting to see what Krishna wants, or I'm trying to do what my spiritual master wants. But important part of our identity is what we want, because the desire is the symptom of the soul. So we have to want something, even whether you want what Krishna wants or you want something completely different, completely opposite, but you still have to want something. And this helps you, and helps you feel that I am a person, I'm a living being, I'm somebody who desires.
So we went through this just last week. We did a japa retreat level 2. And one of the things that we do, and through meditation, through visualization, we help devotees get in touch with what they really want, because chanting is based on feeling. And so if you contact where your heart is, what's in your heart, you can express that. It's a form of prayer. So you're expressing your heart. And some of the devotees of Indian background said, well, our training was just to obey our superiors, do whatever they asked. So when we asked the devotees, well, what's in your heart? They said, well, I just prayed, Krishna, whatever you want me to do. So it was kind of, it was a little ambiguous. And we were trying to help them. So I think that may be part of a problem many people face, because we're trained, well, Krishna, whatever you want me to do, Guru Maharaj, whatever you want me to do, I should do that. And so we may not be thinking particularly, or may be thinking, well, it's not good to think particularly, because that will be personal.
It's what you should be, ideally, like pure devotees ready to anything. Well, we are not on that level, so we cannot imitate that level. So now, at this point, we have to find something to lean on, and something to do, to put our heart into, and our desires, focus our desires on, and that can be our present identity.
But also, you see in the prayers of pure devotees, their desires are very specific.
Mm.
Their prayers are very specific. They're asking Krishna particularly to help them in certain ways, or their prayers, they're offering something to Krishna. So I think it's an important point. It's the connection of your heart with your identity, and also the point of connection of your service as part of your identity. It's maybe not my eternal identity, but it's an identity within the mission of my spiritual master that means I have a position, I have value, I contribute to the benefit of humanity through my service. And, okay, I'm not eternally a pujari or a cook, but still, that's part of my varna. And then we have the identity of ashram. Well, it's bodily consciousness. Even sannyas is bodily consciousness. But that identity facilitates. Even put any emphasis on ashram or varna.
You could say role, that role facilitates development of bhakti. So role, having a specifically defined role actually helps you have an identity within spiritual environment.
Yeah, so find your role in Krishna consciousness instead of losing your personality.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on. Suffering means advancement, or... No, isn't it advancement means suffering? That if I have to suffer to advance, or I guess part of this would be the more advanced I become, the more I'll suffer. Because like Prabhupada said when his spiritual master came to him in a dream and said, you should take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, oh, I thought this was horrible. I'd have to take sannyas. So any kind of fear of doing something means we're associating some kind of suffering with that activity. So
yeah.
I know a lot of devotees may look at things in that way and think, I either have to suffer to make advancement, or if I become advanced, I'll be in a situation where I'll suffer. So,
Krishna consciousness is a combination of nectar and austerity. And when one gets practiced in austerities, then he starts to like them, like getting up in the morning or listening to your rounds. It's a great austerity in the beginning for the mind, because the mind wants to think of so many things. But once you develop a taste for attentive chanting, then you know, always want to do it that way. So it's a combination. And advancement doesn't come only through suffering. So is eating prasadam suffering? But you make spiritual advancement. Is singing and dancing suffering? But you make spiritual advancement. So there may be a difficulty to, you know, get out, distribute books, or get into the kitchen and cook. But once you start doing it, and you do it with proper consciousness, thinking that Krishna will be pleased with this, and ultimately I will also be very happy, then it's not a suffering, it's a pleasure.
I think the irony of this is that any advanced devotee we see, we never look at them and think, oh, this devotee must really be suffering. We don't think that. And our experience is, when we're not Krishna conscious, then we suffer. So all of these beliefs need to be rewritten. And I would rewrite this to say, absence of Krishna consciousness equals suffering.
Yeah.
You may not always think you're suffering, but ultimately that's where you end up. And you may look at this advanced devotee and think, yes, this advanced devotee is undergoing difficulties, austerities, but at the same time you can see this devotee is happy in Krishna consciousness, happier than you, because he's more advanced. So I always like to look at the advanced devotees and think, yes, they may be doing austerity, but just look at the result.
So we are just touching upon these points. We are not going very deep, but if you want to know more, you can contact us or you can attend our courses. But we want to go through these several limiting beliefs just to intrigue you and to inspire you to think of them and try working on them.
Yes, so the next one is, in Krishna consciousness, there's no room for creativity. I think this may also come from having a very overbearing temple president who demanded that any creativity, any ideas you had should be subdued, and therefore you just need to get out there and distribute books. Uh-huh. Something like that. That must, or surrender to whatever it is you're supposed to surrender, because using your creativity is getting in the way of what this leader wants you to do.
Also, rules and regulations might, like standards, they might actually feel like to limit us. But within the framework of Krishna consciousness and within the framework of the standards and rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, one can be unlimitedly creative. And Krishna, he enjoys variety. But we have to find a way how to express ourselves and our creativity within Krishna consciousness in a bona fide way and please Krishna with our talents.
Yeah, also like you say, even if your only service was to do one thing, you could be extremely creative within that one service. And also, we see many devotees, while they were surrendered doing that one service, they had a broader idea in their mind, which was simmering and developing. And later on, when opportunities came, they had more freedom, or there was a need, they were able to do that service, and they had already had planned it in their mind. So that's also part of the creativity. We can think of how to expand our service even beyond what the demands are of the current situation.
Mm. So can you give an example of doing a simple service that can be developed in a very creative way?
You'd like me to give an example?
Yes.
Yeah, well, deity worship, even book distribution. One devotee, the first time he went out on book distribution, he was trained by one of the best book distributors in our movement. And when he saw how this devotee distributed books, he told himself, I absolutely do not want to distribute books like this devotee. That was his resolve. Most every other devotee would just take the training and follow it, and this devotee said, I absolutely do not want to distribute books in this way. He disliked that method so much. So he used his creativity, and he developed another way to do it, which he felt was better, or at least better for him.
Did you hear about the smart box?
Yeah. So many creative ways that Vaisheshika has come up with to engage devotees in book distribution. And,
distribute while you sleep.
Yeah, yeah. 24/7 kirtan. Uh-huh. Yeah, 24/7 book distribution. So, obviously, for any task, there are innumerable ways of doing it. And also, you see, as society changes, we have to adapt because people think differently. Something that worked at one point may not work at another point because people are different. Or what works in one country may not work in another country.
So we learn to preach by telling. But we are finding new ways to preach by listening and asking questions.
Yes. There's so many ways. There are one devotee joined the movement and he said, when he met me, he said that I listened to him. I just let him talk. And he said everyone else argued with him, but I just let him talk. And
he
liked me so much because I listened to him that we became very close. And through that, we had a lot of things in common. Through that relationship, he became a devotee.
Nice.
So you never know. So that's a creative way. Okay, let's look at the next one. Success is a bad word. What is that coming from? The idea that it's materially motivated or we shouldn't be all the results for Krishna, we shouldn't be fruitive, we shouldn't be focused on achieving a particular aim, but we should be focused on our bhakti. And that would be quite disempowering, I would think, because then you wouldn't be motivated. Mm. We see how Prabhupada, he always gave us some goal to shoot for when we started opening temples. I think probably around 1970, maybe before, he said, before I leave, I'd like you to open 108 temples.
Mm.
So he gave us that goal. And then every year, at a certain point, he asked us to double book distribution. And Prabhupada did say, we don't measure our success externally. But at the same time, he set goals for us.
So. He set measurable goals. So he defined success by setting measurable goals. And this is what leaders do, or preachers. They actually say, this is the next target, this is the next target, and this is how you will advance, this is how will you grow, this is how will you express your devotion to Krishna. So go for it.
I was in South Africa, and the devotees were collecting funds to build this beautiful temple. And it was becoming difficult to raise enough funds, and they were becoming discouraged. And at that point, one of the leaders one of the gurus and GBC leaders left the movement, and they became even more discouraged. So the new GBC came there, and what he did was he made the project even bigger. So you would think this is counterintuitive. He said, we should make it even bigger. And by doing that, the devotees became even more encouraged,
uh-huh.
just to see the new increase. Well, we could do this and we can do this. So I've noticed that sometimes we need very big projects to become encouraged. We need big goals to inspire us. Otherwise, we can become lethargic and just discouraged. Some people have big appetites in devotional service. They want to do big things. And when they have big projects, they become extremely inspired and they're giving so much energy to Krishna. And so Prabhupada was expert at extracting energy by putting these carrots in front of our noses of big projects, of translating books in so many languages, distributing so many books, opening so many temples, gurukuls, farm projects, restaurants. So,
well, he also wanted us to be perfect gentlemen, to develop our character.
Yes, so success on two tracks,
externally.
And, you know, Prabhupada always taught us the internal success produces the external success. And sometimes what happens is, I think where this could come from is that if we achieve external success, we'll convince ourselves that is also equivalent to our internal success because we will think, well, I couldn't be successful externally unless I'm successful internally, which is not true. And sometimes it actually creates a blind spot. And we deceive ourselves that way because we don't want to face the anarthas within, or we're neglecting our sadhana. And so we do something external which is very successful because we can't be successful internally. An interesting thing is, in this regard, at the Japa retreat we were at, Rabindranath Prabhu was making the point that in the early days of our movement, when we were very young, we were very focused on the external journey, the opening of temples, the going to new places, the doing of new things. And we were less focused on the internal journey.
Mm.
You know, but now, as we're maturing, there's much greater focus on the internal journey, because we ultimately know that the external journey is ultimately dependent on the internal.
What would be success for you? What does success mean for you?
Success for me is purity. I feel that if someone comes in my association and they get something from me personally, even if I don't say anything, just by my presence, I feel that's fundamental success for me, and that everything is built upon that. And I feel that without that, other success is a bit artificial, because it is who we are that changes people's hearts. And if my heart is contaminated, it's not going to change another person's heart. So if a person sees that I'm developing Krishna consciousness, I'm developing good qualities, it'll build faith in the process. It will actually change their hearts. Mm. I mean, our hearts change powerfully in the association of other people. So it's an important factor. The next one, devotees are poor. So if you become a devotee, you're going to be poor. Which is, it's really more of your choice.
Krishna says, I take away everything. If I am merciful to someone, I take away everything from them.
Yes.
So it doesn't pay off. One devotee told me that he would rather worship Shiva because Shiva gives these benedictions.
What do you think Prabhupada would say about that? I'm going to worship Shiva so I can be wealthy. If Krishna...
Alpa Medasa. Less intelligence.
It depends the kind of life you want to live. Krishna will let you live a life of poverty. He will let you live a life of wealth. It depends what you want. It depends what you need. It depends on karma. I think more it's, if Krishna gives me wealth,
yeah,
then he's showing me, okay, I trust you to be able to use this. Or if Krishna's taking it away, then he's saying, I don't trust you. Or I want to test you. Or I want to see what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And so, to be a devotee, like Prabhupada was asked about wealth and poverty. And he said, of course, if there's poverty, it doesn't mean you're spiritually advanced. And if there's wealth, it doesn't mean you're not spiritually advanced.
Yeah.
So it's the attachment to wealth that can be problematic, not how much you have. It's ultimately, everything is how it's utilized and how attached you are to being wealthy, particularly if you're in poverty.
Mm.
So, you know, for in certain positions, like if you're a sannyasi, you should be in poverty. If you're a Brahmin, then you give everything away. You should live simply. If that's the kind of life you choose and that's the kind of role you take, then if you're taking it voluntarily, then Krishna will say, okay, that's the life you live. If you're living a grihasta, if you have a business, if you're working to support the temple, raise a family, then being in poverty is more difficult unless everyone in the family is agreeable that we want to live that way.
Mm.
So I feel a lot is dependent on what's needed and what the focus is and what the ashram is. And it's not arbitrary. You become a devotee, you'll be poverty-stricken, or you'll become wealthy.
Krishna knows what you need, and he'll give you the resources accordingly. And there is one saying that the happiest man is not one who has the most, but the one who is happiest with what he has.
Yes, definitely. The one who doesn't want much is wealthy. So then we have another one here. Devotees are not organized materially. It seems like what he means is being organized materially is not important. Perhaps when you become a devotee, you become disorganized. Doesn't sound very Brahminical to me. You know the story where someone was cleaning Prabhupada's desk and they moved some, like his pen? I believe they moved his pen, like an inch.
No, I don't know.
And he said, why did you move my pen? Why didn't you put it back where it was? So Prabhupada was meticulous. And I think really, if we say this, it might be circumstantially that the devotee is so much engaged that he's become splayed out. Or it could be that the devotee by nature is disorganized and he's using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. Or maybe he's just eating so much prasadam he can't think straight.
We have a Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daily schedule, super organized. You know, every minute is organized. So it's actually a mode of goodness to be organized. And if somebody thinks, oh, I'm transcendental, you know, I don't have to be organized, usually what is happening is some kind of mode of ignorance is creeping in.
Our effectiveness, obviously, is definitely influenced by how organized we are. Okay, for all of you disorganized devotees, Akura just said you're in the mode of ignorance and you're not Brahmins. You going to take that? The only way you can prove him wrong is get organized. Clean your rooms, put everything in the proper place, get your schedules together, create your priorities, focus on what you have to do, do it well. This is brahminical activity. Okay, the next one. Rather than taking action, we rely on Krishna. So this is very disempowering. There was the Christian monk who said, act as if everything depends on you and pray as if everything depends on God. So I think that's the perfect amalgamation of the question of effort versus mercy. We rely totally on Krishna. That doesn't mean we don't do anything.
Yeah. So we are responsible for our lives, and we are responsible in front of Krishna. So we don't want to engage him in our service. We want to do things, and then results depend on him, whether he will give us results or not. But we want to make a proper, sincere effort.
Of course, we know that certain things we don't have the power to achieve, and that we depend on him to achieve it. But how will Krishna know what we want unless we make the effort, unless we show? Just like I may ask you to help me do something, so you come over. So I say, I need help moving this table. You come over, and so you pick up one end of the table, and I don't do anything. And you say, Mahatma, why didn't you pick up the other end? I said, no, it's your mercy, you'll do it all. No, so Krishna wants to see us pick up one end of the table, he'll pick up the other end of the table.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And then some things, yes, Krishna will just take away. We'll just do the process of bhakti, they'll go away. And other things, they won't go away. And Krishna's saying, look, you have to work harder. This anartha is really a problem for you. Work on it, do something. And show me you really want to get rid of this. You really want to transcend it and purify it. So then I'll help you. So you may not, you know, we don't just wait around and think of Krishna just praying and doing nothing. What did Prabhupada say? First deserve, then desire. So the deserve is act. Act, you know, I'm taking it upon myself. I am making this effort, but I know Krishna's mercy, it will happen by his mercy, not by my strength. In the world of self-help, they teach you the mantra, you can do it. You can do anything you put your mind to.
Yeah.
You know, they teach you that it's like it's totally relying on you. You are like everything. So obviously we don't want to be that way.
I have a very nice tool for procrastination. It's three words. Do it now.
Wasn't that Nike's mantra?
No, Nike's is just do it.
Oh yeah, just do it.
But do it now, it also focuses on time. Just if you think, oh, I have to do this, do it right now. If you don't have anything super urgent to do in that particular second. And just, you know, I think one of the keys to success is do the first step. You know, get up and do the first step. Make that phone call. Do this exercise. Write this letter. Send this CV. You know, do the first step and then the second step and third step, and you'll start moving like anything.
So procrastination is a serious influence of the mode of ignorance.
Yes.
In particular, I mean, we may not procrastinate in all areas, but in certain areas, the mode of ignorance may just envelop us. Okay, here's another one. Reading Srila Prabhupada's books means to mainly understand how terrible this world is.
So that's not true.
What was his idea? He doesn't want to read Prabhupada's books because he becomes discouraged or depressed?
Yeah. That's how he takes them, but he doesn't see so many wonderful positive things about the spiritual enjoyment, spiritual world, spiritual bliss. So this is not true. This is just one-sided understanding of Prabhupada's books.
Well, I can see where he's coming from, because I think if we focus too much on negative things, we can become negative. But, of course, Prabhupada's focus on the negative of this world is also a focus on the positive side of Krishna consciousness, the positive of the spiritual world. And psychologically, unless we're frustrated with something, we won't give it up. So it's kind of part of the process of jnana, of detachment, by understanding things are bad. So I think it's also important to know that our conditioning is such that we see suffering, but we see it in terms of its potential. How can I enjoy it? We're living in the material world. It's a place of suffering. We know that. life can end at any moment, and we're always looking, how can I enjoy this? Every little inch, nook and cranny of this world we're trying to enjoy. Mm-hmm. So he could also see the positive side of the negative and say, I need this sobering information because my heart is so, it's like a compass for enjoyment, so I need to understand I'm not the enjoyer. Okay, the next one. Non-devotees are without worth. Karmis, demons. Have you ever learned anything from a non-devotee, Akura?
Oh, I learned so many things.
Whoa, you must be a Maya. You're learning from non-devotees. Yeah. Oh, my God. What should we do with Akura? Should we put him in a vat of boiling ghee? He's learned something from non-devotees. This is terrible. And these people may not even believe in God, and you've learned something from them. I don't know.
Well, one kind of amazing thing that happened with my studying some professional literature is that I discovered more value in Prabhupada's books by reading. Like, for example, I learned from one book, what does it mean to build trust? Like, Srila Prabhupada gave us the principle of love and trust, and then I learned the details how to build trust. So that was very helpful. So basically what you can learn from these books, professional books, for example, you can learn how to be in the mode of goodness more effectively. Although their goodness is mixed with passion and ignorance, but when we apply it in Krishna consciousness, it can become very, very useful, very practical things.
Krishna can speak through anybody. I think the proper attitude is, we're always trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we should always be open to learn from every situation, any person. Obviously, you don't just go to anyone for your spiritual advancement. You have to choose very carefully the qualifications of a guru. But you could learn how to apply so many things in Krishna consciousness, even from the newest bhakta. And yeah. I think part of this understanding is just the whole idea is that we see people who are not Krishna conscious have like almost like alien entities. That, yeah. You know, you shouldn't get close to them, you shouldn't touch them. But the attitude of a devotee is that he sees everyone as a devotee, just covered. So they're not aliens, they're devotees. And there's so much God consciousness in the world. You see that in people. Many people have strong faith in God and they have deep realization of what it means, what devotion to God means. It may not be come in the same form as we have, or the same cultural format, but you see how Krishna's revealing so much through the hearts of so many people due to their desires to advance in a particular way or due to the questions they ask.
We will have a separate session. We need more time to discuss this, you know, how to use the professional literature, whether we should read them, is it bogus, and things like that. It's a big topic.
So, we have a few more. Everything is Maya. Is that true? I thought everything, Brahma Satyam Jagad Mitya, I thought everything in this world is false. So what's the problem of saying everything is Maya? No, everything we do in Krishna consciousness, is that what he's saying? Well, so many things we want to employ in Krishna consciousness and people are saying it's all Maya?
I didn't ask him what he meant by that, but I think just the opposite is true. Everything is Krishna.
It sounds like
everything comes from Krishna.
It sounds like he's been told, or he thought, he's thinking there's limits in what we can use in Krishna's service because everything is Maya. Of course, the other side is everything is Krishna, and everything is meant to be used in Krishna's service. Okay, Krishna consciousness means no more fun. Rabindranath Rupa was saying he was on Harinam in the 70s, and some Christian came up and said, he saw them chanting. He said, "You cannot get to God by works." And Rabindranath Rupa said, "Who's working? This is fun." And the Prabhupada said, "Krishna consciousness is—it's all recreation." Mm. So, from Prabhupada's point of view, it's the ultimate fun. And then, you know, we talk about fun. What is fun? It means doing something with friends and bonding. So, you know, we can bond with devotees. It's not like we have to go to a baseball game to bond or, you know, play some sporting event. But, you know, we bond. That's the real... I mean, anything we're doing, it's all about bonding.
To me, the most exciting thing in Krishna consciousness is something that looks most difficult, and that's the change of heart. I think I see, I mean, work with hundreds of devotees. When they make this decision that I'm going to go forward, I'm going to take responsibility for my life, I'm going to do my best, this is where they become excited about life and where basically life becomes fun.
Well, that's a great point. Also, I was thinking, spreading Krishna consciousness is the most fun I've ever had. I've done so many exciting things. So, you know, if we take that challenge, let's do something wonderful. We go to all these amazing places, meet all these amazing, wonderful people. It's incredible, the lives we have, if we put ourselves out there. Okay, the last one. Great material accomplishments mean nothing, and we should look down upon them. What does he mean by that?
Well, that material accomplishments don't have any value, and that, you know, they're just temporary, and people who achieve these things, they are in illusion, they are puffed up, they are proud of their material accomplishments, they will have to lose it at the end of life, things like that.
Which is all true, but we want to achieve great things in Krishna's service. Like when I see the great accomplishments of people who are not devotees, I always think, we should make that person a devotee, they're so qualified.
Krishna said also that anything that you see are opulent, that's me. So we can recognize that Krishna has empowered this person to achieve this. And now for us, the main question is how to use it in Krishna's service.
Yeah. So that means I should watch the Olympic Games because I can see Krishna as the ability in man. And I should go to concerts and see Krishna as the ability. Or, I mean, devotees have argued that way. No, I'm seeing the ability. But when I see these great things, I think, well, we should too. We should do these wonderful things for Krishna. Not that we should enter the Olympics per se, but look at the dedication people have given to it. So what's possible? What's possible for a human being? I was thinking recently, if we look at the changes in our movement over the years, particularly now, there's been so much more emphasis on going internal, and devotees, many devotees are chanting more than 16 rounds, many leading devotees are very busy. And it's because a few devotees just really started focusing on the holy name and improving their chanting and diving deeper into that ocean, and it became contagious. So there's a lot more at stake for us in improving, because the results we get from that kind of focus are tremendous.
So instead of using the great accomplishments as an excuse for, you know, more sense gratification, for example, you can be in front of the stadium and distribute books or prasadam, and you don't have to get in there and, you know, listen to the concert or watch to a sports event, but you can just utilize the fact that there is so many people in one place and then give them Krishna consciousness. In this way, you can dovetail.
There's so many things we can do. Okay, we're going to end now. I want to thank Akura for being here, and you can get him at vedicilluminations.com/Gita Coaching or at Akura, blah, blah, or you can get him at akura@pamho.net, akura@pamho.net. And if you like, you can get me at tstrain.com. tstrain.com, or mahatmadasa@gmail.com, or mahat@aol.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.